Hi there guys, this is Andy from Retro Asylum and this is a pre-announcement to the main podcast. So guys, I just want to cover a few things before we get into the main episode. So first things first, I want to thank our sponsors. As always, we have Dino Dini, we have Anthony Ogden, Stephen Brooks, Stelios, and of course, Mikey J. Hay. So if any of you guys want to sponsor the Retro Asylum podcast, head on over to retroasylum.com. And this little PayPal button down there, you can put as much as you want or as little as you like. Just everything goes a long way. So thanks very much, guys. Now, second thing I want to talk about is how to win a ZX Spectrum. Now, if you want to win the ZX Spectrum, all you need to do is go to our Facebook page and you just have to like it, comment and share the post I put on about how to win a ZX Spectrum. It's as easy as that, and the winners will be drawn at random and the winner will be announced at the end of the month. So yeah, enjoy the podcast guys, thanks very much.
Hello, it's Foggy and you're listening to the Retro Asylum. Thanks for joining us. Today I'm going to ramble on about general retro game nonsense with Simon LCFC from the forums. And as always, I'd like to take this opportunity to apologise for the poor sound quality and poor content as well, if the truth be known. Like I say, this show wasn't planned. It was far from planned, and that's apparent. Seriously though, hope you enjoy it, and here it is.
What a load of rubbish!
Simon, hello.
Hello.
Okay, we're going to recap on the 8-bit, what was it, hero, villain, boss, supporting character, vehicle.
That was one, yeah.
That we invited people to email in with their choices. From memory, mine was hero was Rockford, boss was come back to that, supporting character was the Pie Man from the Automatic Games on the Spectrum, vehicle was the Cobra Mark IV from Elite, the villain was the Green Yamo, and the boss, it was originally the Sentinel, but I'm going to have the Marshmallow Man from Ghostbusters on the Commodore 64.
Right, okay.
And you've forgotten yours, haven't you?
I've forgotten every single one of mine, yeah.
Right, I'm going to open a thread on the forums to put them all on.
Yeah.
So no one forgets anymore. But we've had about four or five people actually email me with their choices, which is pretty poor, but it was me and you doing the podcast on it, sorry, so, you know.
Yeah.
I think...
It was slightly shambolic. I haven't got really high expectations of this one, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't expect much. And I expect the listeners aren't expecting that. In fact, they're probably just fast-forwarding to the end to get them to
I would imagine the loudest noise would be pants slapping the forehead going on.
Yeah, not these two clowns again. Here we go. Right.
They're going to argue about genres at 40 minutes and 13 seconds into this.
Let's never fall out about genres ever again.
Ah, we didn't fall out about it. I think you're being a bit dramatic there, mate.
Okay. Anyway, your 8-bit hero was, you don't remember any of these, do you?
I don't. I remember that it was the Clockwork Mouse. You said Clockwork Mouse a minute ago. The Clockwork Rabbit from Liquid Kids, the boss at the end of level one. So that's my choice of boss.
Right. There was the Saint from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
The villain was the Bulldozer from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Yeah.
Right. So that's your villain. Your hero. You can't. The vehicle was the. Was it the trailer from Lunar Jet Man?
Yes, it was. Yeah. Right,
so I remember more than you. These are your choices. Come on. villain, hero, just forget it. Jesus. Right.
I'll tell you what, should we come back to this? I'll try and remember, or I'll just randomly.
Well, no, people have emailed in. So, Sam from the forums.
Yes.
Has emailed in his hero, the Aztec dude from Aztec Challenge, because he managed to survive. Because how he managed to survive was beyond me. he was nearly stabbed, drowned, and crushed. Not if he was any good at the game, he wasn't. I'm just saying that.
Okay.
But yeah, okay, you can have the asset. Did he have a name, that guy from Asset Challenge?
You know what, I've got no idea. I don't think I ever played it.
That's a crime in itself. Just for the music, mate. But anyway, that's his hero. The boss was the Demigorgon from Forbidden Forest. Spent hours trying to defeat this guy. If I remember rightly, he had to kill him with a pixel-perfect headshot very hard. I don't think I ever got to that point. I've played it emulated afterwards, and it was like on a trainer mode, so I think I had arrows or something.
I've briefly played with the Forbidden Forest games. They were quite good. But yeah, I've never really played them.
Well, good on Sam, because he's picked Asset Challenge. What was that? What was that?
That was my phone. Oh, I've got it on the silent, I do apologise.
Come on, he's not very professional. I'm going to leave that in as well.
It's retro. It's the for anybody who's trying to guess what the ringtone was, it was the music from the Pearl and Dean adverts that used to have at the cinema. Anyway, moving swiftly on.
So he's picked Asset Challenge and Forbidden Forest, which are two pretty good, and the music is like really, really good. In fact, I might stick some music in this podcast from one of them two games, maybe halfway through or something, if I remember.
Sounds like a plan.
Supporting character was Nancy from Chase HQ. She was hot. You only heard her voice, you didn't see her. She might have been a right old minger. So, you know, careful what you say.
Are you sure about that? I'm sure there was a picture of her.
No, it was just a radio, wasn't it? This is Nancy from Chase HQ, blah blah blah. And it was just like.
No, there was a. I tell you what, I'm absolutely certain. On one version, at the very least, there was a picture of Nancy on one side of the screen, and there was a picture of the two cops on the other side of the screen.
Not on the arcade version, was it? Surely. I would have remembered Nancy if he was any good.
I don't think it was the arcade version. I'm sure it was in the Spectrum version.
Oh, well, I don't know about that. I didn't have a Spectrum at that point.
The music. Something else. The Spectrum version was easily the best conversion of it. Very, very, very good game.
Maybe it was, maybe it was. I didn't play it, the Spectrum one. I had it on the Amiga. It was alright, but I mean, the arcade one was the best, I suppose. Vehicle, the up and down main vehicle, which was, thinks it is a VW Beetle, which probably, I think it was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Cool car that could jump and squash other cars. Up and down was a really underrated game.
It was very good. Sega, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I doubt on the 64, but I've since played, you know, found it on MAME and that. And the arcade version is really good. It's like a bit of a hidden gem. It's like, what would you call it? Sort of, it's like Mario Brothers, but in cars and a sort of isometric 3D.
Yeah, it's got a weird sort of isometric viewpoint. Yeah, excellent game.
Yeah, underrated, really. I might have a better go afterwards. And the villain was the bloody shark in Magic Land Dizzy. You have to jump onto his fin as he's moving to get across the moat. So easy to get that wrong and die after hours of gameplay. Never played any of the Dizzy games, really.
Yeah, I can feel Sam's pain with that one. That was a nightmare.
Oh, yeah. You've played it a lot, dude.
I've played that, yeah. That was just outside the castle, and yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was a nightmare to get over.
Okay, so that's Sam's choices.
Next up, Neil Harmon. He's picked his hero as Isvar from Fairlight. Who wouldn't want this guy on your side? So powerful, he had the ability to slow everything down if more than two characters appeared on screen at any one time. Him being a hero, but good choice though. Isvar, the Fairlight games are excellent. Both of them I enjoyed.
I remember they look really good.
Yeah. I did have a point with the slowdown, though. I mean, when there was a lot on screen, it did tend to crawl around quite a lot.
But they all did. So did Nightlaw and all that. But tons of things turned up and it slowed down.
I should have picked that as a villain, Nightlaw. The entire game, Nightlaw.
Well, maybe you can. You obviously have to redo your choices because you forgot them all. But,
well, so. Yeah. It's been a while. Yeah, I'm knocking on a bit, you know.
Yeah, you're nearly 40. Or are you 40?
No, I'm nearly 40.
It all goes downhill from there, mate. Believe me.
Thanks, mate. Anyway. right. He's picked his villain as the Boot from Jet Set Willy. always ready to emphasise your inability to make that jump or dodge that object by flattening you at every opportunity.
That was that's pretty iconic sort of ending, really, isn't it?
It is, yeah, very Python-esque.
Yeah, well, he nicked it from Monty Python, didn't he?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think he's acknowledged as much anyway, but I mean, there's a lot, you can see a lot of Python-esque type humour.
Yeah. Okay, what we got?
He's got Big Bertha as his boss from Renegade. That was from level 3. I'm sure it's from level 3. To this day, I've always feared an encounter with a woman like this. I've come close on 2 occasions. It would have been 3 if you'd ever met my ex-wife. If you're not careful, she'll...
Let's hope she's not listening, sorry. Those are child support payments have been turned up a little bit, wouldn't they?
Right, moving on. We're going to delve that deeply into my personal
life. No.
This is going to be here for about 3 hours, and I'll go and fetch popcorn.
Let's not start you off there.
Anyway, if you're not careful, she'll kick your ass in a flurry of podgy punches and flab-crushing kicks.
Are this your ex-wife you're still talking about? Or?
No, this is this is Bertha.
All right, sorry, mate. Okay. Okay.
Again, the similarities. But moving on, later we'll talk about Renegade instead. It's far more enjoyable and it will not result in me having some sort of emotional breakdown.
Alright, well, let's move on, Simon. You know, I think I'm a blubbering mess on this podcast. Well, not anyone's bloody listening.
We're not discussing
anyway.
This to be from level 5 of Renegade. So.
Okay, what's next?
Right, next up. Supporting the big sandworm from Critical Mass. Okay, he may be the byproduct of a Dune fan, but Jurel hit the spot with this lovable worm who, for its day, stood out via some great animation. You're going to have to fill in the gaps here because it's one of the few Jurel games that I didn't actually play.
I remember it, and I remember loading it, and I've loaded it since on an emulator, but. It's just like a little sort of hover car and you're flying it around and sort of isometric thing, and I really couldn't be arsed with it, to be honest, at the time.
On the Commodore, I remember seeing the Commodore 64 screenshots and it looked superb, but it just...
No, it's good, it does look good, but it must have caught me at a bad moment when I had other stuff to do or something. I'll have to check it out again, maybe.
Well, same, one of them I never got round to playing, I was never too fussed about, so... never mind. Vehicle, then. Thanatos, the dragon, from obviously the game Thanatos. Technically a vehicle, as he was used as a mode of transport during the game. A technical marvel, and the only game to this day that my dad ever stuck around to watch me play.
Yeah, I'd have that as a vehicle.
Yeah, I think that qualifies, yeah.
Okay, no, we're allowed that, because we have the power.
Yes.
Okay.
He has also put a little point at the bottom that if it's disallowed, he'll plunk for the Cybernoid ship from... can you guess which game this is from?
Cybernoid, maybe?
Spot on, you know your stuff, Dan.
Yeah, that's a good guess. it has been allowed, so you don't need to plunk for anything.
Okay. No.
I've got the next one here from Michael or Mikey J. Hay on the forums. Okay, Michael. You've chosen. Hero is little computer person. Did he have a name?
No, I don't think he did. I'm probably wrong, but no, I'm not sure he ever did.
But that's a good hero. But little computer people, it was only any good if it was on disk, because it remembered all your settings and, you know, loading it up on cassette each time, and you had to load your settings. But if it was on disk, it was all there. It was like he was actually living in your...
Yeah.
Commodore, you know what I mean? So, yeah, that's right. You can play poker against him, I remember that. Or cards.
You can get him to play the piano and some stuff like that. It was,
It was Tamagotchi, wasn't it, really?
Basically, yeah. A precursor to The Sims.
Yeah, good point. That was Hero. The villain was Death from The Gauntlet.
Good choice.
Is that the one you couldn't kill? It took like 50 billion shots to kill?
You could, yeah, but it was really, really hard. Potions. I think it was... I think you could kill him with 2 potions in a row.
Alright.
So...
Gauntlet was just like a massive shooting, that was, as far as I was concerned. I didn't really understand about the potions and stuff. But
it was good. As a multiplayer game, it was absolutely...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And in the arcades,
Yeah, the four player thing, yeah.
Stunning, yeah, yeah.
Although, if you, I played it four players once, but if you've got one of the extreme left or extreme right joysticks, if you know what I mean, on the cabinet.
Yeah.
You had to sort of play it sideways, it was, because it was a bit crowded around that cabinet.
Yeah, yeah.
That didn't work out. But there you go. Boss was the Ghost Rider from Wheelie, which is a good boss, actually.
That's another good choice, yeah, yeah.
Although he's a that Ghost Rider was a bloody cheat, because you had to you had to go back the way you come and do all the jumps and go slow over the ice.
Couldn't he go through the landscape?
He just went through the whole lot. It was just like, well, what's the point in that? That's a little bit of a disadvantage there.
See, I always had, I don't know why, but there was a level called the Bouncing Hedgehogs, and I haven't played it for years. And it took me ages to even get past that, to actually get to grips with the game.
But it's worth persevering, because that Wheelie, and I remember at the time, the animation was like tip-top.
Yeah, it was an absolutely stunning game. Really, really enjoyed it.
Of course, now it looks a bit dated and stuff, but still got the gameplay there. So that's Wheelie on the Spectrum, the Ghost Rider. Supporting character was Alien from Rescue on Fractulous. You know the one?
I know the game. I have never ever played it.
Well, that's another good game, because you have to basically go and rescue pilots from this planet, Fractulous. Yeah. And you'll land your ship, and you'll see a little pilot, that you've got, stranded pilot you've got, running towards your ship, and then you can open the airlock and let him out. But sometimes you'll see one, and he's got like a green face you can see from the distance. And he'd jump up on the screen and start bashing on your windscreen with the ship. And it makes you jump the first time you ever see it, you know. And it's really like pretty good, but you can zap him from outside. That is a really good choice, actually. Supporting character. And the vehicle was the jetpack in Monty on the Run.
That's another good choice, actually.
I don't even think I remember the jetpack in Monty on the Run.
Well, it was part of the Freedom Kit, weren't it? So you had to obviously pick the five items at the beginning of the game. That was the only problem I have with the game. Is obviously now, you know, and you know, back in the day, you'd have these magazines, and now you can look on the internet, and you know, it takes you half a second to find what the Freedom Kit is. You type it in, then you're away. All you've got to do is get through it. But if you didn't have the information, it took a lot of trial and error to actually get through and complete the game.
I think I actually wanted Monty Mole, and that I don't think I played the Monty on the Run.
Very good. The music was excellent on the Commodore 64, certainly. So, but yeah, they were all good. I'd really say Monty, I'd have to say, for some reason, was my favourite. I just played that to death. I still play it every now and again now.
Oh, right. Well, maybe see, every time we have these chats, I feel like I've got to check out a load of new games, you know. which is no bad thing, but
No.
Because everyone's got seems to be getting Xboxes now with emulators on it. You've got one recently, didn't you? I've had one for a while.
Yeah.
I know Swainy and Andy have got one now, and so there's no real reason for people not to check these things out, because they're at your fingertips, you know.
Right, and now we've got Andy's.
Okay.
And his hero is Dizzy.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't see that one coming. Is he? I've got no love for the little thing. No, honestly, I've never really got into him. I don't think I had a Spectrum when Dizzy came out. I think I had a Commodore 64 about then.
I quite enjoyed them. I liked them on the 128K. The soundtrack, the music tended to be very good for the Dizzy games.
Right.
On the 128K, but yeah, they were.
Oh no!
Good little games.
I know they're not crap games, but I just never got into them. You know? And we met one of the Oliver twins at that thing in Wolverhampton we went to. What was it?
We did, yeah, I think he's a good choice as a hero.
Okay.
He started to actually.
It's one of the more sort of obvious ones. You know, I was waiting for someone to pick Mario and Manic Miner and stuff, but it didn't happen. So, you know, they're still available if anyone else wants to pick them. But there you go. What we got next?
Villain, and he chose the Burglar from Keystone Capers.
Which is a 2600 game, which I've played.
It is, neither have I. That's a bit, I'm sure it's an excellent choice. So, but
it might not be, it might be a terrible choice, but we don't know. What I'm going to have to do is...
I think we can trust Andy's judgment with that.
I'm sure it's fine.
Yeah.
I've got a 2600 emulator on that Xbox we were talking about earlier, and I will fire it up and have a quick look.
Okey-dokey.
But that's his villain. What about supporting character?
Supporting character is Boney from Trapdoor.
That was a great game.
Yeah.
And I remember it wasn't that well received when it was made. Like from magazines and stuff. I think Crash rated it very highly.
No, I don't think. I'm sure Sinclair User gave it a pretty good rating.
Nice big
pretty sure that's
stuff.
On top. Yeah.
Nice big sort of graphics and that, you know.
Don Priestley, weren't it? I did like his game. My favourite was Popeye, actually. I thought Popeye was.
Yeah, again, nice big brilliant. Screen. Benny Hill as well.
Yeah, that was another good game. Yeah.
What was Boney? Was he the skull? The skeleton?
Yeah.
Is the main character, was it Lurch or Mel?
No. It wasn't Lurch, you'll think that was Adam's family.
No, what was he called then? The blue blob thing? In Trapdoor.
Do you know what? I can't remember. I honestly can't remember.
Do you know what? We're crap at this site, aren't we? We can't remember anything. We just spend the whole time giggling and arguing. It's ridiculous.
We haven't had an argument yet. I'm all pretty right. Sure we've
been
right.
Yeah.
Well, no, this is true. All shall right. We move on? Shall we go on to the
vehicle? Yeah, let's move on.
The motorbike.
I've lost the wheel. I really have. Right. Vehicle and motorbike from Kickstarter 2.
That's it. Yes.
Yeah.
No, that's an excellent choice.
Do you remember what sound they made when they the rider got thrown from the vehicle?
It
was ooh. It sounded like a campfire. Ooh. And anyone who plays it,
oh my god,
what I'm talking about.
You're not going to make that noise again, are you?
No.
You might start
twice,
no,
twice
a bit.
Day I do that.
Sound like a French ambulance. Right, anyway, speaking of arguments that we haven't had yet, Andy was chosen as his boss, the Bull, from that fantastic fighting game, Way of the Exploding Fist.
Oh, the sports simulation Exploding Fist, yeah.
The fighting game.
The Bull,
yeah.
Where you got a
wonderful beat 'em up by Melbourne House.
Beat 'em up / sports game, which is karate as a sport. But, yeah, so that is a good choice. But was it a boss, the Bull? Because if you didn't kill it, you carried on playing, didn't you?
Yeah.
You could knock it out with one punch if he was any good. But once it went,
I can't even remember that I played it through to that point. Exploding Fist.
It was just, if you got to 10th down, the ball would run at you, and you had to kneel down and punch it, doing that kneeling down punch, and knock it out.
Right.
But if you didn't, it knocked you over, and you carried on as you were. You know, so it wasn't like a character that. So it wasn't a boss in that sense. Do you know what I mean? You could carry on without it. So maybe that needs to be thought of again, because before that he picked the green ammo, which I had already picked, so he couldn't have that because it's only, you know, first come first serves.
Well, yeah, that's true.
And that ball from Exploding Fists, you know,
you don't think that qualifies as a boss then? No.
Well, I did. I think if I remember rightly, I said the definition of a boss is something that comes at the end of the game or something that you need to get past to complete the game, and that's neither. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I suppose it works in a similar way to the sequences of Street Fighter 2, where you got to beat the crap out of cars and stuff.
It just struck me as a bonus level, almost. You know?
Exactly. That's the point I was trying to make. Thank you.
So, you know, with the greatest respect, I think Andy should choose again. Really.
Yes.
I know it's exciting and everything, but you know, it doesn't cut any muster with. This little project we got going on, Simon, we've got to be strict. You understand?
No, not yet.
Right. I've got Scopey's choices.
Okay.
And he's a hero. Well, you might know this, Simon, because it's in Japanese, and you like a bit of Japanese.
Did you refute that rumour? But anyway, carry on.
Well, from what I understand, you like a bit of Japanese stuff. So
yes,
his hero is... Can you read that?
Usagi Yojimbo, yeah.
What's that?
He's the samurai rabbit from the Firebird game.
What, ninja rabbits or whatever it was called?
No, it was actually called Usagi Yojimbo.
Oh, was it was a game?
Samurai Warrior, yeah.
Samurai Warrior, that was it, because there was a game called Ninja Rabbits as well, that's what I got confused.
There was, yeah. I think that was Silverbird, wasn't it? Or it was one of the Firebird offshoot labels.
That's where I'm getting confused.
Yeah.
That's wrong. So, yes.
Very, very good. Very good choice. It was a good game, actually. Again, one of those better on the Commodore. It looked superb.
Goes for a lot on eBay. Well, not for a hell of a lot, but I mean, slightly a cut above the rest.
Yeah.
Like, from bearing in mind it's a cassette game, it always goes for about £10 plus, you know? That's not bad, really.
Surprises. It is a very, very good game.
His villain was Lester from Skate or Die. He was the... He was an adversary in a couple of the skating events. So, he was like an opponent then in some of the skating events. I don't remember you had to compete against anyone or anything like that.
I'll be honest, I don't know.
Oh, am I thinking of 720 Degrees? That was different, right?
720, yeah.
Again, sorry for everyone.
You know, all the skate parks, didn't you, in 720?
No, I think on behalf of both of us, apologise for this being such a crap podcast, sorry. We can't remember anything. It's just like a couple of old people, a bus stop or something.
We've had a few little responses to our sort of heroes and sort of 8-bit heroes and villains and things like that.
Yeah.
And the trouble is, people have brought up games that none of us have ever played. So
we should have done our research, shouldn't we? Surely.
You'd have been pulled off the air about 20 minutes ago, let's be honest, if this was a radio show.
Oh, yeah. There'd be some... And now, here's some music, because they couldn't be bothered. Okay. His boss is Giant Fist, mid-level one from Turrican.
Oh, yeah. All right. Yeah, I remember that. Very, very good choice.
Again, Turrican, not a game I really got into. surprise. I mean, believe it or not, I did play some games back in the day, but he seems to have picked all the games I didn't play.
Yeah.
His supporting character's Maria Whitaker from Barbarian. Well, that was just a poster, wasn't it? It wasn't...
I was going to say, I might have to take a bit of an issue with that.
Take a bit of a what with it?
An issue.
Bless you. Sorry, I couldn't resist doing that joke.
Sorry, that was a little pause while I watched some tumbleweed drift after that. Fantastic.
You walked straight into it, didn't you?
Well, yeah.
Maria Whitaker from Barbarian.
Well, she didn't actually appear in the game, did she?
Did she?
She might have stood by because you had the...
Oh, hang on. Didn't he rescue her at the end or something?
That's what I was going to say. She might have been sort of standing by...
But that wasn't Maria Whitaker on it, was it? It was some prince... I mean, I don't know. It's a bit tenuous. I'm not sure about that one. I mean...
I can find because I think the majority of people who went out and bought Barbarian bought it without actually reading any reviews. Granted, it is a fantastic fighting game.
Yeah.
But there were a couple of reasons people bought that game, and I don't think any of them were the content. To be honest with you, I think it was more the cover and the poster.
Yeah. Well, a couple of reasons indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
his
vehicle was the buggy from Buggy Boy, which, of course, we've spoken about in the past, and that's very good. But yeah, good choice.
Yeah, very good game.
That was Scopey.
I just remember what my hero was.
What was your hero?
Ted from Technician Ted.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Oh, good grief.
Yeah, how do you... Oh, God. I associate you with Technician Ted all the way, so, yeah.
Yeah.
So that was it. That was pretty pitiful. It was like four people had sent us their 8-bit heroes.
I'm sure after people listen to this, they'll...
We get emails flooding in, won't we?
Well, they'll be emailing you in their dozens, mate.
Right, well...
asking you to stop, probably.
Yeah. No more, please. Yeah. Will you shut up about your heroes and villains, for God's sake? We're going to put it up a thread on the forum for that now, where we can list people's choices, but I don't want that to be the end of it. I think we should extend it for another, well, few weeks until we do one again, Si, because when we originally suggested this 8-bit hero thing, we was doing a week of shows, and that show was only sort of up at the front of the site for one day.
Yeah.
And then someone else's came along, and then someone else's came along again, and blah, blah, blah. So I'm not sure if some people might have missed it or thought we were not doing it anymore. Well, we are. We're still desperately clinging on to the hope that some people are interested enough to do it.
Yeah.
And so we want your 8-bit hero, your 8-bit villain, your 8-bit supporting character, your 8-bit vehicle, and your 8-bit boss. And if you email them to foggy@retroasylum.com, so that's foggy@retroasylum.com, and we'll read them out on a future podcast that me and Simon do, and we will put them up on the forum as well at some point. But yeah, if we don't get a big response from it, then we'll just sort of quietly put it to bed or put it out of its misery or whatever. But yeah, well, thanks to the people that did bother to sort of email in. But we'll see how it goes. You know, it's either going to work or it's not. There's a thread on the forums saying MAME, the less obvious bunch, which I think Matt started.
Yes.
And it's basically saying, have you got any good recommendations for some MAME games that aren't really played that much? Or aren't really well known, I should say. And I actually have, and it's a game called Showdown, which is a poker game. We obviously play the cards, you know. But it's against sort of set in the Wild West, if you like.
Yeah.
And it's a poker game, originally played with a light gun in the arcade. But you can use a mouse if you set your MAME up correctly, or your controllers. And you play cards, and if you win enough hands and knock someone out, you play against three other opponents. They challenge you to come outside for a shootout, you know.
Right.
Which is a nice little twist, yeah. And it's a good good card game as well. And it's got speech in it, and it's a really good game. And I think I originally started playing it because I just fancied playing poker, and I just found it, you know. But the more I played it, the more I got into it. And if you upset somebody, he goes, right, step outside, you know, and you have a bit of a shootout, and you can come back in and carry on playing cards sort of thing.
That does actually sound really good, yeah.
Yeah, it is good.
Yeah, I did actually post something on that thread, actually, a couple of choices. I mean, I've gone for some cave shooters. I didn't actually, in sort of, I'll hold my hands up, and I didn't actually realise that the thread was specifically meaning sort of Xbox, the Xbox version of MAME. I thought it was just MAME in general.
No, I'm guessing it was just MAME in general. But
oh, it is MAME in general.
I'm just saying, because I had it on the Xbox, and
I should put my hands back down again then. But yeah, I mean, I'd recommended a couple. ESP Galuda, a sequel to one of my favourite. Stop saying that, please. It wasn't funny the first time.
Well, you're laughing for saying that wasn't funny. You're having a good laugh.
Well, all right, it was a little bit funny.
Right.
But yeah, it's actually a sequel to a superb shooter called Esperade.
Right.
Which is very, very bizarre. I mean, you associate most shooters, you've got spaceships or some sort of vehicle or stuff, but this is all telekinetic powers and lots of spiritual stuff as well, and it's really good.
Sounds a bit deep for shooting.
Well, it's a shooter, you know, you just shoot things. But the other one, the main one I sort of mentioned was a game called Mushi Himishisama.
Right. I think I had that before. Gave me the shits. Oh, sorry.
Do you know what? I anticipated you saying something, you know, mentioning something.
Oh, mate.
You might want to know, actually. It's an insect-based shooter. So, I mean, giant sort of praying mantis bosses and ladybirds that fire out stuff from the... It's very, very bizarre. But, I mean, it's a beautiful-looking game. It plays superbly. And the soundtrack is probably one of the best soundtracks I've heard on an arcade game. Mushi Himishisama.
Right. Okay. How do you find all these Japanese games, Si? No, I mean, what sort of draws you into them? Because I just pretty much go for the usual suspects, and occasionally I'll find a game that I didn't know about. But
there's a lot of games on loads of different systems. They just never ever got released over here. I mean, you go back to the NES and the Super Nintendo, even down to the NES in the 80s. Japan were getting excellent conversions of games like Galaga and Popeye and, you know, loads and loads of sort of the benchmark, if you like, arcade games.
Mm.
Very, very few of them came over to the West. Dig Dug 2 got a release in the US.
Yeah.
First Dig Dug never made it out of Japan. And it's been the same pretty much ever since, where a lot of releases are just held back and they just don't bother releasing them over it.
And what do you mean the first Dig Dug didn't make it out of Japan?
Well, the NES version, I mean.
Oh, I was going to say. okay, yeah. Well, I suppose Nintendo stuff was made its own rules back then, didn't it, I suppose? Because it decided what went where, and I guess they did market research and work out if it was going to worth their while or not, I guess.
Yeah.
They just probably wouldn't have sold that many, I guess, is what they were thinking. But, yeah, that's another podcast for the future, maybe, is, you know, the games that never sort of made it over here in great numbers and that, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. Showdown was one of my choices for the main, less obvious bunch. And the other one was, the only reason I played this one a lot is because it's right at the start of the list. Is or one of the, you know, one of the ones at the start of the list is 10 Yard Fight, I think it's called.
Yeah.
And it's an American football game. Now, I'm not really into American football in any great capacity. I know roughly the teams and stuff, but I don't really follow it much. But I understand the way the game's played and that. And it's sort of like an arcade version of American football, so it's not difficult to play. You don't have to work out plays and, you know, all the technical aspects of the game. You just have to get 10 yards or pass your first down, you know, pass your 10 yards that you have to get to before you get to the new play, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
I probably haven't. It's probably an American football. It's just a game that you can pick up and play for 10 minutes and not really, you don't really have to get into it. It's just a little distraction sort of game. And when I go onto the most played thing on the main list, you know, you can click on the most played.
Yeah.
The most played that you've done. That, surprisingly, was number one. I've played it a lot more than I actually thought I did. So that's 10-yard fight. It's a pretty good game in the sense that it's just a little pick up and play. You don't have to really, really get very far on it to get enjoyment out of it, you know?
Yeah.
Have you got any other main games that you would recommend just off the top of the head?
Well, I mean, it's just like you say, the usual suspects. I mean, every now and again, picking up another game of Bubble Bobble or even Bubble Symphony, the second one.
Yeah.
Getting into, I never could get on with the third one. It was the backgrounds. Do you remember the Bubble Bobble series? Obviously, you remember, but the first Bubble Bobble.
Yeah, the first one. Yeah.
But the second one was still had a really cartoony feel to it. It had a bouncy soundtrack, not quite as memorable as the first game, but it was still nice. But the third one, they introduced digitized pictures into the background.
Oh, right. Okay.
And it looked, I'm presuming they were trying to just to make it a little bit more serious or whatever, but it just took the atmosphere away.
I think it wasn't like digitized pictures pretty much becoming pretty in vogue at that point.
Yeah.
And they just thought, oh, well, this looks classy if we put one in, you know. Yeah, looks like it didn't.
It just looked like they pulled it from an Amiga clip art disc or something.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, them like the PD discs on the Amiga, and if you got one, I remember one of the demos that I managed to get hold of was called the New Tech demo.
Yeah.
And I've looked it up on YouTube since, and it's pretty boring now, but it's like digitized pictures of Groucho Marx, and then it'd be someone's face, and then it'd be like a woman holding some flowers. And I just remember like thinking, wow, this is incredible. You know, a digitized photograph, it looks so real. I mean,
for the time, yeah.
Talking 88, you know, and I don't even think, I think they only just invented digital cameras there. I remember seeing an advert for a digital camera in the late 80s, and it was a Sony one, and it was about the size of a house, and I think it took about four pictures and then the memory was full up and that was your lot. And it was like, you know, really low resolution still. So that's what you were sort of talking about, you know, these kids today, they don't understand, do they?
No.
They give away digital cameras with magazines now and stuff. It's ridiculous.
But yeah, I mean, back in the day, I remember playing do you remember a PD title called the Red Dwarf Trivia Quiz?
And it had
digitized picture of the... I mean, it was basically just a text quiz game.
Yeah.
But the opening, when you put the disc in, you had the big digitized picture of Red Dwarf and the soundtrack played in the background, and it was just amazing at the time.
It was, just putting in a little disc and getting all that out of it. There was another one. It was a Star Wars... Star Wars... 1, if you like, or Star Wars 4, Episode 4, depending on which way you want to look at it. But it was that in black and white, a very small box, you know, on a black screen, and it played like some scenes from Star Wars, and I thought that was amazing. But
yeah,
it was the kind of, it looks like it was done on the Game Boy, you know, now, looking back on it.
Yeah.
It was really like blocky and grainy and stuff, but at the time I thought that was fantastic because it had digitized speech, things like that, and, you know, again, you wouldn't be able to convince, like, if my son, who's 12, if I showed him that, it's, well, what are you showing me this for?
Yeah. Well, they've just... I mean, there's been a couple of re-releases of old games that have cropped up on the PC. Pac-Man Championship Edition.
Yeah.
And Mickey Mouse Castle of Illusion.
Yeah.
And they both look absolutely amazing. The Pac-Man, the Championship Edition Deluxe Plus, to give it its full name.
Right.
But it looks absolutely phenomenal. It's got, you can actually interchange the soundtracks and the graphics, so you can actually have Dig Dug or Rally X.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Sprites and backgrounds, still while playing Pac-Man.
Yeah.
It's silly. It seems really silly, but it's absolutely fantastic. It looks great. And same with Mickey Mouse. What they've done with Mickey Mouse is they've basically turned it into a toned-down Super Mario 64.
Right.
And they've done a really good job of it. But if you... Kids now, if they looked at them games and then you showed them the games that they were based on, they'd be like, rubbish. And
they just... Of course, what's come out currently as we speak, which has been out for a couple of weeks now, is Grand Theft Auto 5. Which... To be fair, it looks beautiful, you know, it looks great. And
yeah.
Apart from that, it's just Grand Theft Auto all over again, you know, give or take.
Yeah.
The missions are, you know, quite similar in that, but what else can you do with it? But it just struck me just playing that the other day and chasing, the mission where I had to chase someone on a motorbike and it's going through the streets and stuff. And at one point you're chasing someone on a road with like cliffs, you know, along one side, and it reminded me of Test Drive,
yeah,
on the Amiga, you know, or Test Drive 2, or Test Driver, as Glenn would say. Right. So, and I thought Test Drive was pretty, you know, good back then, and then this is just like, well, let's say 1,000 times better. Just this one mission in one game. And it just struck me then how far we've all come, you know, and how some retro games, while being cutting edge at the time, are bloody awful now, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's the good benchmark of a good retro game and a bad one. And usually the bad ones now, well, when you look back, when you think, oh, this looks rubbish, we're cutting edge at the time, like Formula One Grand Prix, you know, on the Amiga.
I mean, the mark of a good retro game is something that you can still pick up and play and enjoy today.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I mean, too often I think a lot of people look at these games through rose-tinted spectacles and, you know...
Oh, yeah, it's a nostalgia thing, but...
It is, very much.
Formula One Grand Prix on Amiga, then... 91 or whenever it was, I remember everyone thinking this, you know, this is great, it's so realistic and blah blah blah. And you look at it now, obviously with the improvements in processor speeds and graphics and everything else, it looks terrible. But saying that, something as simple as Defender in the arcade still looks really current to me. I don't know what it is, because it didn't try and push the boundaries. It was just concentrating on gameplay. Well,
that's what it did. What it did.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It was concentrating on gameplay primarily, rather than...
Exactly. It's the same reason why games like Bubble Bobble and Rainbow Islands and Manic Miner and, you know, Technician Ted, I'll chuck that in as well. It's why they remain endearing, is because they stuck to one task, they did it absolutely brilliantly, and it didn't matter whether the graphics were awful or not. The graphics were pretty good on all of those titles, in my opinion, but...
Yeah, they did the job, didn't they?
Yeah, but the gameplay was just absolutely solid and so tight, really very little you could fault. Well, Jet Set Willy.
Well,
needed
again...
Needed to catch into buggery before you could actually finish the thing, but...
When it worked properly, it was all right.
Yeah.
But yeah, I understand what you mean. But yeah, it's funny that some of the best... The games that I thought were really, really good just look terrible now, you know?
Yeah.
And, yeah, so maybe... I don't know if that's a definition of a good retro game or not. Maybe people listening have got a different definition, but something that really doesn't look out of place on an iPhone now, for instance, or an Android tablet.
Yeah.
But something like Formula One Grand Prix on the Amiga from 91 will look pretty crap, whereas Robotron or something like that. It looks pretty good.
I don't know. When I told you that I'd that Commodore 64 that I found, it's actually started to work properly now. So yeah. I've got a SCART cable for it. I plugged it into my 40-inch TV,
uh-huh.
and I've got a copy. I've got a few loose cassettes. Well, I've got hundreds of bloody loose cassettes.
Right.
But I found a copy of Power Drift in there. Yeah. And it looked surprisingly good. Playing, actually sitting there and playing the game and having the sound come out of it, it looked really, really good on that size screen. So
I didn't play it on the Commodore 64 Power Drift. So I always remember I was really impressed with it in the arcade.
The arcade version was superb, but the conversion was excellent, and they managed to cram it down into a single load as well, from what I can remember.
Right.
So,
well, maybe it blows what I'm talking about out of the water. I just think people trying to be too ambitious back then. Not too ambitious, but pushing the machine to its limits.
Yeah.
You were held back by the machine's limits, you know. And so I think some games were destined to be made in the future, but they tried to make one an inferior machine.
You know, look at the Imagine situation when they had the Mega Games coming out in 1984. You had Bandersatch and Snot and Sidepat.
Yeah, that's right.
And the logic behind doing them was that they believed that cassette-based games on the Spectrum have been taken as far as they logically could.
Mm.
That's why they were developing these games, you know, in a time when games were £5-6 at full price.
Yeah.
Developing these £40 titles, and, you know, of course, we all know that went
a little bit
pear-shaped. But, of course, you had games that came out, you know, weeks and weeks after Imagine collapsed that completely proved that theory wrong. I mean, you've only got to look down the line and look at the conversions of Bubble Bobble and Rainbow Islands and games like Where Time Stood Still and Head Over Heels and Batman and things like that.
Yeah.
All the stuff that Ultimate did. And Imagine, really, with the games that they were doing at the time, Pedro and BC Bill and...
Well, BC Bill was all right. Pedro was a bit crap.
Well, wasn't Pedro the game that they'd offered to Marshall Cavendish and for the input?
It was a Spanish game, wasn't it?
And then Marshall Cavendish basically said, no, sod off, this is rubbish, and asked them for their £200,000 back. Didn't help, really.
No. It makes me lose that much money in games like that back then. And, sort of throwaway games now, even given the time of day. But.
I was reading about it the other day, and I obviously knew quite a lot about what happened. It was there to see in the sort of famous Commercial Breaks film.
Mm.
But I didn't realise that, or I might have skipped over it, that they'd actually basically taken over the cassette duplicators that Christmas, hadn't they?
Right.
What they'd attempted to do was prevent anybody else from duplicating a lot of cassettes.
Yeah.
So that they'd have the monopoly.
Right, okay.
And that all their cassettes would be on the shelves, and, you know, a lot of the other publishers would just not have a lot of stock at all. And it backfired, because they ended up with hundreds of thousands that they couldn't shift.
Yeah, it's quite interesting, the history of the software industry, the ways blatant mistakes have been made like that, like Atari, and, you know, making more ET cartridges than there was consoles, you know.
Yeah.
You know, someone,
that was brilliant. It was you rank
would have thought someone would have seen that coming, you know. How many consoles have we sold? How many consoles, you know,
The journalist spoke to, it was Ray Kazar, wasn't it, the head of Atari at the time?
Yeah.
And I think a journalist said to him, well, why have you produced twice the amount of these cartridges than there are machines? And he turned around and he said, well, I thought people would like an extra copy to play in their summer homes. What the...
Yeah.
This is the logic. I mean, this is a man who refused to acknowledge any of his programmers or game designers on the labels. He just saw them as the little people.
Well, the guy who did the game Adventure, that had an Easter egg in it, which if you do a certain thing, or some certain things, you got the guy's initials come up in the game.
Yeah.
Which is a sneaky way of getting there.
I think they always found little ways of making their mark on the game.
Or so just left, and like David Crane, and just, well, I'm not having
that. Well, I went and
started Activision.
That's it, Activision, so...
And he's still about, so... Although, didn't he try Kickstarter a little while ago, a year or so ago, and ask for too much money? And
I've got no idea, actually.
Oh, talking of Kickstarters, and actually this is on topic, actually, about pushing a machine to its limits. Deus Ex Machina. That was a game that was over-ambitious because it was trying to squeeze everything onto a 48K machine. And
yeah.
It's been remade and funded now, and I'm in on that, if you like. I've got what I've got coming is the book about Automata, the game itself, the signed posters, the CD of the music, and odds and sods, you know, and that's all coming. It should be this month. And I've been getting emails off Mel as of all the backers with little demos and stuff you can play. But he was actually saying that that this is the game that he was trying to make back then, but he was just didn't have the power to do it. Because you couldn't just do it on a Spectrum or a Commodore 64, it had to be done on a sort of today's machine. So I can't wait to really have a go at that and see how it's going. But it'd be quite a good collector's items I've got coming, posters.
Yeah, and I would imagine so. I mean, he's got a lot of the soundtrack has got more of Ian Dury on it, hasn't it?
Yeah, the unused stuff.
The unused stuff from the archives of the old game, and which would be brilliant to have a listen to. So,
well, he's selling them. He was. I think he was one of the, if he was one of the backers, if you backed, I think it was like £1,000 or plus or something, quite a lot of money. You could get the master tapes of Ian Dury and Frankie Howard and stuff. It was
great.
Yeah, the actual masters. So that was.
I mean, they're things that are going to be of interest, not just to gamers or people who are interested in video game history. I mean,
Ian Dury was like, for those of you who don't know, Ian Dury was a sort of rock star in the sort of late 70s, or new wave sort of era. Died of cancer in the 90s, was it?
I think he was about 96, yeah. And he suffered from polio, didn't he?
He did.
Early age, so that it, I think they said that the polio actually brought on the other illnesses. So
who knows, but I mean, bottom line is he's not about anymore, and sadly, but and he had a very distinctive voice, and I think that's why Mel Croucher used him, because he had a very distinctive voice, as did all the people, Joe Pertwee and Frankie Howard, all very distinct people. And he's got Christopher Lee, or Darth Sidious, who I think he is he? In Star Wars? He's got Christopher Lee, basically, doing the voice. By the way, my photograph is going to be on the end credits, because it said for backers of a certain amount, which is the amount I backed, you email him a photograph and he put it on the final credit. So I'm actually in the game. How cool is that?
As an incentive to complete the game, I think it's second to none, mate. Yeah, I think
my picture coming up at the end. But
you might get Mr. Croucher phoning you up or emailing you at some point saying, why are you telling me all this? You know the amount of people that are pulled out of this project now?
But yeah, I think that's bloody fantastic, for them actually put your photograph in the game.
No, that's good,
With your name as well, So yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. So, and I think he's going to remake Pymania as well, which was another game that... for those who don't know, Pymania was like an adventure game, but sort of based in reality. So the locations were... real, and you had to play the adventure in real life as well. And the ultimate, how you won the game was you had to be at a certain place at a certain time, and you could dig up a golden sundial, wasn't it? That he'd buried actually.
That was it. Yeah.
In Sussex somewhere, I can't remember where it was now. Hampshire, I can't remember, but he buried a golden sundial, and you had to complete the adventure to work out where it is. It's quite an interesting website. It dedicates to it. If you type in the Golden Sundial of Pi, P-I, in Google, you should see all the info about it. So he's going to remake that anyway. And I'm not quite sure. I think he's going to do it as a Kickstarter maybe as well, it looks like. And that would be interesting. I think I might invest in that one as well, just to get all the odds and sods that come with it, big fan of All Matter Games and Noel Croucher.
That's something you've kept well hidden, mate.
That's something what?
Something you've kept very well hidden.
What? The Noel Croucher thing? You've been sarcastic.
Me? No.
Okay, well, any other topics you want to throw out there, Simon?
Do you know what? I was going to talk about the remade games that have appeared recently, but they've had a mention, so...
have you got any sort of topics off the top of your head that you think we should cover in future? Because I was thinking of doing one about the Intellivision console, which was the main rival to Atari. In the late 70s and early 80s.
I don't know much about those.
Well, yeah, not many people do, and that's why I wanted to make one. And they were better than Atari's, graphically. They were a 16-bit machine back then, even, you know. But, yeah, I've got a theory on why they didn't do too well, but I might explore that in the podcast coming up. So that's maybe something I was going to do. But, yeah, have you got any ideas?
So off the top of my head, I've not really got anything. No, I mean, the idea that you had earlier about games that weren't released over here, because, I mean, that's something that could be endless, really.
Well, yeah, you know more about that than me. I'll sort of be hanging on your coattails for that one, I think.
Well, it's the same with doing the Intellivision one. I'd sort of be... just following along and nodding and agreeing.
Well, hopefully, these sort of things inspire people to sort of look it up themselves, because, like I say, the Intellivision is a very interesting system and better than the 2600, I'll stick my neck out and say.
Do you read a lot of these Retro Asylum threads?
I've read the one where it says you beat me at Sensible Soccer, but, you know, I wasn't trying, obviously, because... I thought, I'm not playing this crap.
What a load of rubbish.
And do you remember the game we played before that? Before Sensible Soccer? And what was that game, Simon?
Wasn't it Project X? I was pretty bad at that.
Yeah, he was as well. But the football game we played just before Sensible Soccer on that fateful day.
Like Pro Soccer.
No. If you'd like to think again, it was Kickoff 2.
Premier Manager? Kickoff 2?
Yeah, and do you remember the score there, Simon? Remember what score it was?
Yes, I do. You beat me 3-0.
Oh, exactly. So let's just lend it there. Not only is
it
a better game, but I'm best at it as well. 3-0.
Honestly, there's nothing worse than having a footballing discussion with a disgruntled Spurs fan.
Listen, there's nothing disgruntled about me, mate. if I told you that much, I'll make you choke. Sorry. make you choke on your own words. Right.
No, it's just, you know, it's just the bile coming up from listening to you.
Right.
Singing Kickoff 2's praises. No disrespect to Mr. Dino, but Kickoff 2 is lovely.
Dino's a dinosaur.
Dino. Okay, I got completely confused. I thought this was Television Asylum when we were discussing the Flintstones.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay, well, I think we've been flogging a dead horse for the last half an hour, to be honest with you.
Pretty much.
So, thank you for listening. Simon, you still haven't got a Twitter page, have you?
No, I do apologise. I have a life.
Ooh, solid half the planet. Well done. perhaps you should get a Twitter page, because it is handy for keeping in touch with the podcast and people's comments and all that. I've had a couple of nice comments from people, only a couple though, about our podcast that me and you have done specifically, and just in general about the Retro Asylum. So if you need to, I don't think anyone needs to contact me on Twitter, but if you want to, contact me on Twitter or add me as a friend or whatever you do. I'm Retro Darren on there. RetroDarren on Twitter. Simon, you've got to pretty much get one, haven't you, before we can start mentioning your Twitter account, because it doesn't exist, does it?
It doesn't exist, and I'll be perfectly honest with you, mate. It's never going to exist.
Okay.
I'm just one of those people that I don't do social networking stuff.
No, nor do I. But I've just got a Twitter account just for the retro gaming side.
I go on the forums, you know, people can private message me or you know, they can just whatever.
So on the Retro Asylum, you are Simon LCFC, correct?
I am indeed, yes.
And I'm Foggy, F-O-G-G-Y. If you want to email us to tell us your 8-bit hero, villain, what was it, vehicle, hero, villain, vehicle,
boss,
and supporting character.
Supporting character, so yes.
Get some sort of database of who's what. But once you've made your choices, no one else can have them, so choose wisely. And if you email that to me, foggy@retroasylum.com, and we put them up and talk about them on the next podcast and put them up on the forums in due course. Thank you to Dino Dinny for paying for the fees for the next couple of years. Very nice of him. It's not a joke, serious. Very nice of him.
I knew there had to be some sort of reason that you keep singing the praise of the kickoff too. It's not that you actually consider it's a good game. It's just that you're getting royalties.
No, I wish. I was picking up kickoff two. I've always said kickoff two is better than Sensible Tour because it is. It's just more playable. But that's another argument we're not going to have now, Simon.
If we have plans to do a World Cup special,
I think we should.
And I think we definitely should. I can imagine there's going to be quite a heated debate, and
we will thrash it out, get to the bottom of it. That's what we usually do.
But there will be plenty of other games to mention. I mean, we've got Match Day 2, we've got all the management titles from Colt, there's hundreds and hundreds. Mm. The Mexico 86 US Gold debacle.
That's a good future podcast we'll do. But anyway, I'm Foggy in the forums. You're Simon LCFC in the forums. You can PM either of us in the forums if you want, or go to the Twitter page, which is Retro Darren. What else? Foggy@retroasylum.com if you want to suggest your 8-bit hero, villain, blah, blah, blah. And that's it. I think we're done. Unless there's anything else you want to add there, Si?
No, there's absolutely nothing at all. I think we've covered everything that we said we were going to discuss in this episode.
Okay, that's good.
As usual, we came into this completely prepared.
Yeah.
With weeks and weeks of planning.
Yeah.
And
I've got to say, it does sound a bit sort of... no one can not accuse this of being organic. It just, you know, we just start and then see where it goes. And hopefully it's been entertaining, but I doubt it, don't you?
I doubt it. We've enjoyed it, though.
Yeah, sod everyone else.
So, yeah, I wonder if you lot don't like it, then, you know, Radio 1 or something, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. Chris Morris. and, of course, keep listening for everyone else. if you'd rather not listen to us, there's plenty of other podcasts on the Retro Asylum. We have people who take it, obviously, a bit more seriously and are a bit more professional than us.
Absolutely fantastic. Following up, son off and listen to Radio 1 with, keep listening to us.
No, I'm just saying, it's, you know, I don't want people to judge Retro Asylum on us too going on.
Asylum is actually a fantastic place. The podcasts are done by a committed section of professionals.
Well, professionals.
They just let us Muppets have a go on the mic every now and again.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about. We're not lump us in with professionals.
No. Patience.
Yeah, okay. Thank you for listening, and we will... we'll do another one at some point, I guess. We're a bit sporadic when we do ours, aren't we, Si? Okay, well, thanks for listening, and goodbye.
Yep, bye-bye.
Fantastic.
Was it?
Mission accomplished. Congratulations.